ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So we are studying now this book, Vedanta Treatise, reason it is, in that we've just started the first chapter and we have completed two topics in this first chapter. The first topic, in fact, the chapter is called as Role of Vedanta. And the first chapter is Science and Vedanta. It talks about what is the real meaning of Vedanta. Vedanta is the subject that talks about the real self within. We do not know about our real self, we only know about our outer self. So Vedanta is a subject that talks about the real self. Knowing about our real self, we can go about living our life totally with both peace and prosperity. So here he defines life as Anubhava Dhara. Anubhava means experiences, Dhara means stream. So our life is nothing but stream of experiences. Series of experiences flowing is our life. And an unit of experience is, unit of experience is one experience, right? Series of experience, so unit of life is one experience. So then if unit of life is one experience, then what is an experience made up of? Experience is made up of the individual and the world. When I contact the world, there is experience. So therefore, we need to study both the individual and the world. But in the world, you will see people study more about the world, less about themselves. If at all people study about themselves, it's more about their physical body and their mind. They're more interested in the psychology. But beyond the mind, there is Atma. Nobody knows anything about it. So therefore, Vedanta says, without the knowledge of the self, people are living in this world, it is like somebody getting lost in desert and is lost with no direction whatsoever. They don't know anything, where to go, how to get back to the city, because the only way they can get back is with the help of the sun above. Supposing you don't have GPS or anything, how do you get back? You'll have to get back only through the sun above, right? Sun above will tell you this is the east. When it rises, you'll know that's the east. Then you can figure out all the other directions. Similarly, without knowing about oneself, if you get in, you will be in trouble. Therefore, first and foremost, one must understand about one's own personality, what you are made up of, and realize the self, and then meet with the challenges of life. And also, when you study about the individual, you understand that as human beings, only we have what is called as this choice of action. Animals don't have choice of action. And therefore, we better learn how to live, develop our inner personality, basically the intellect vis-a-vis the mind. Because generally what is happening is, our mind is stronger than the intellect in many of the cases. Because we have not strengthened the intellect. Therefore, it's extremely important to strengthen the intellect. Intellect is there as a potential in all of us. But that doesn't mean that you have the ability to control. Intellect has the ability to control provided it's developed. Therefore, one needs to put in the effort and develop the intellect. Vedantic knowledge helps you to develop the intellect, and then you will be able to meet the challenges of life and achieve peace and prosperity. And for that, he says the next topic is Vedanta, the base of our religion. First of all, the term religion, which means to unite back to the origin. You know, every religion for that matter, essentially, is only trying to tell us that one needs to get back to the self. And that is exactly what Vedanta talks about. But here in Vedanta, a lot of people take it as if there are lots of do's and don'ts. Anything forced is never forceful. So there cannot be just a set of do's and don'ts. What is do's for somebody need not be do's for everybody. What is don't for somebody is not don't for everyone. So how can there be a set of do's and don'ts that everybody must follow? It won't work that way, you know. So therefore, there are no do's and don'ts in Vedanta. You can do this or can't do this. Generally, we say anything that will take you away from the self is don't. Anything that will take you towards the self is a thing that comes under do's. That is how we generally talk. But we can't say, these are all bad, these are all good. For whom? For some people, certain things one needs to do to be able to evolve, which may not be the case for the other person. So you cannot kind of have a static precept and say everybody must follow that. That is not what Vedanta does. So he says, you need to reveal the truth through your questioning and then following, not following mechanically. Just like how a scientist would contact the subject science, you need to contact Vedanta through inquiry, reflection and putting it into practice. You've got to draw the knowledge out. So this much we have studied. Now let's get on to the next topic, tributes to Vedanta. Now tributes to Vedanta is a topic where you don't need explanation. It is just Swamiji has given this topic for people who have, you know, still, okay, who all have talked about it. If I want to study Vedanta, who all have talked about it, only then I will be inspired to study it. Otherwise, I'm not so much interested. So therefore, for such people, he has given this. It really doesn't matter whether these people pay tribute to Vedanta or not. It is a subject that will help me. Who has paid tribute to it, I don't care. That's how I should approach. But for few people, few enthusiasts who would go by the, opinion of others, this topic may help. Therefore, Swamiji has given this. So we'll just read through this. Tributes to Vedanta. Shweta, you can read it.
Tributes to Vedanta. Several savants and sages have paid glorious tributes to Vedanta. Some of their observations are quoted below. The glory of Vedanta is not dependent upon those observations. Vedanta stands on its own merits. Perhaps though these quotations may enthuse those initiates who value authorities. The assurances may help them launch their study with greater interest. The great philosopher has hurled abuses on other philosophies save his own. But on Vedanta, he says, in the whole world, there is no study so beneficial and so elevating as that of the Upanishad, Vedanta. It has been the solace of my life. It will be the solace of my death. Max Müller, the renowned German Orientalist, comments upon this assertion of Schopenhauer. If the words of such an independent philosopher require any endorsement, with my lifelong study of all the religions in the world and all the systems of philosophy in Europe, I am ready to humbly endorse this experience of Schopenhauer. If philosophy or religion is meant to be a preparation for the afterlife, a happy life and happy death, I know of no better preparation for it than Vedanta. Paul Deussen, professor in the University of Kiel, Germany, found the philosophy of Parmenides, Plato and Kant in a nutshell in Vedanta and advised the Indians. Vedanta in its unfalsified form is the strongest support of pure mortality, is the greatest consolation on the sufferings of life and death. Indians, keep to it. The Indian sage Swami Vivekananda declares, while every other religion depends on the life of some person who was its founder, Vedanta was based upon eternal principles. It was on this that it claimed its claim to being the universal religion. All ideals are true and the different religious systems were but special paths for the attainment of those various ideals, which when intensified, was certain to draw out the divinity in man. The greatest apostle of truth, Swami Ramtirtha, pronounces, Vedanta brings you a religion which is found in the streets, which is written upon the leaves, which is murmured in the brooks, which is whispered in the winds, which is throbbing in your veins and arteries, a religion which concerns your business and bosom, a religion which you have not to practice by going to a particular church, mosque or temple only, a religion which you have to practice and live in your everyday life, about your hearth, in your living room, in your dining room, everywhere you will have to live that religion. Another great philosopher, Schlegel says that in comparison with the Indian thought, the highest stretches of European philosophy appear like dwarfish pygmies in the presence of the grand majestic Titan. In his work on Indian language, literature and philosophy, he remarks, "It cannot be denied that the early Indian possessed a knowledge of the true God. All their writings are replete with sentiment and expression, noble, clear, and severally grand, as deeply concerned and reverentially expressed as in any human language in which men have spoken of their God. And with regard specifically to the Vedanta philosophy," he says, "the divine origin of man is continually circulated to stimulate his efforts to return, to animate him in the struggle and incite him to consider a reunion and recooperation with divinity as the one primary object of every action and exertion."
So there are few Western philosophers and Indian philosophers' opinion on Vedanta is given here. Like he rightly mentioned in the beginning of this very topic, he says these are only for the few initial enthusiasts who may need this flip, you know, that what these people have talked about Vedanta. Why should I study Vedanta? Why am I going to invest so much of my time? This is our fourth class. You know, this book, Vedanta Treatise, it has so many chapters. Part A, Part B, Part D. Totally, how many chapters are there? 22 or 24? So many chapters are there here. You see here, it has totally, yeah, 21 chapters are there, you know. So 21 chapters. So now, if we are going to spend time studying these 21 chapters, it may take so many years. So we are going to invest so much time. So if I am going to invest so much time, why I am studying, what would be the opinion of others? Some people may want to, you know, generally we have this weakness, no? What the other person is doing, how many people are following, has any great person referred to it? Is the problem, you know. Even, you see, who has said about Vedanta or the Swami? Who are all the people who are attending that Swami? As if you need to measure the depth of that Swami through the people who are listening. But unfortunately, we have this weakness, human weakness. In fact, many, many years ago in Dubai, when I was conducting classes there, one of our class members had invited for his son's wedding. You know, I used to lecture in his company also. So the invitation card said 8 o'clock. So I went to that hotel. It was in Crown Plaza Hotel there in Sheikh Zayed Road. So I went there exactly at 8. And he himself was dressed up in ordinary clothes. He had come to, you know, come for some work there. Nobody else had come. But the invitation card said 8 o'clock. So then he said, please come, and he made me sit down, and I had to go back to Abu Dhabi to take my class next day morning there. So we waited there till about 10:30 for the bride and bridegroom to come. Then I just said, wish them, and then left. No dinner, nothing. But I had to go back and sleep and have my class next day morning, early morning in Abu Dhabi. So why I'm saying this is, later on in Kalish Times, there was an article about people coming late for the Indian weddings and all that. Very interesting. I don't know whether that article mentioned things factually or not, but it presented a very interesting, research. It said people want to come late because of their laziness or getting ready or whatever it may be. More than that, they don't want to be a person who comes first and be seen as a person who has nothing to do. So if you come late, already there are people. So you come late, so you are a very busy person. No, he's a very busy person. He won't be on time, obviously. You know. So that means whoever is coming early, all useless fellows. You understand? So that was a very interesting article when I read in College Times. So you want to see all have come, then I will go. Oh, only these people have come, then I will not go. You have to take something if you believe it's going to help you. Whoever takes it or doesn't take it, doesn't matter. The problem is outside reliance. We all have this weakness to rely on other people, other people's opinion. So therefore, such people, it may matter. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. But also, it's very interesting to see what people from abroad, especially the Western thinkers, have said about Vedanta. They have said that if you want to lead a happy life and meet death happily and have an happy afterlife, you better study Vedanta. So, from the West, from the East, everybody has praised Vedanta, but that means nothing to us. We need to study and imbibe Vedanta to benefit. You know. So, it's like, you know, nowadays when you go to buy any product in Amazon or any other Flipkart or whatever, you will see the reviews, no? You generally see the reviews. What are the reviews? Oh, okay. So many people have said so many things about, okay, then let me follow. In fact, when we have our own YouTube channel, we have only released few videos, we'll slowly release more and more videos so that the class members who could not attend the class can also benefit. Now, somebody told me, don't you keep the comments off so that nobody can write any comments, you know. I said, I don't care. Let it be there. If somebody wants to come and say something negative also, it's okay. No problem. Just put it. Let it be there. But the problem is, so many people read the reviews, comments, and then decide. That's how mind works. Whatever you may say. So strictly speaking, it should not matter to us. Continue. Reason, the sap of Vedanta.
Reason, the sap of Vedanta. The faculty of reason is a human prerogative. It arises from the ability to think. All other beings lack this faculty. Reason makes a human the chief orbs of creation. But few care to develop the act of thinking, reasoning. People do not seem to realize that thinking is skilled work, that you need to learn and practice it. On the contrary, you believe that it is a natural process like breathing or eating, that you can think clearly and accurately without putting in the necessary effort on your part. It is not so. If you are to develop the faculty of thinking, reasoning, you need to devote as much time and effort to it as you would to learning any other skill.
So, the first thing he says in this topic, reason, the sap of Vedanta, human being has the ability to think. No other beings are given this faculty. They, first of all, they don't need it because they are governed by heredity, they are governed by nature. You understand? They are not having to live out of choice. They follow a beaten path. So they don't need thinking, well-developed thinking as human beings do. So we have this faculty called the intellect. But it is there only as a potential in all of us when we are born. Around 10 years or so, when a person slowly starts questioning, you know, when you are 10 or 11 or 12, you start questioning things. So, that's when the intellect is struggling to develop itself. And we need to really develop that intellect. Otherwise, by the time the mind is already developed, so the mind starts taking over. So we as human beings need to live our life educating ourselves. Animals are governed by heredity, law of heredity. They only require training. Whereas human beings are governed by both law of heredity and law of adaptability. You know, we have our own heredity also, but we can adapt also. Like, you know, so therefore you need to develop the to be the intellect through questioning, through reasoning. But how many of us do that? We think that thinking is doesn't require any efforts. It's like eating or breathing. Uske liye kya effort karna padta hai? There is no need for any mehnat. You know, I can just think. So even when we go to schools and colleges, we just do rote learning. There is no questioning. There is no thinking. There is no application. So therefore, the problem is, we think just because we've got some information, we think we know how to think. It is not true. So he says, if you are to develop the faculty of thinking, reasoning, you need to devote as much time and effort to it as you would to learning any other skill. See, 1 hour you are spending every week Thursday. You're trying to focus on a particular subject. We go through a topic maybe. Sometimes one topic we go through in 2-3 weeks. We're dwelling upon that particular paragraph, questioning, putting in our efforts, exercising our thinking. When you do this, then you build the faculty of thinking. Otherwise, you don't build the faculty of thinking. A lot of people think by just reading many books, I develop the ability to think, which is not true. You've given too much of information. You haven't given enough time for its digestion. So therefore, one needs to put in time and effort to think and develop the faculty of thinking. And it's not just the quantum of time, it's also the quality of time. Later on, we'll talk about it. So we say the best time to exercise your thinking is early hours of the day. You know, so when you study the scriptures, early hours of the day and reflect upon it, you are not only in taking in higher knowledge, higher values, but you are also exercising your thinking. So then throughout the day, you will have that ability to, you know, little bit withdraw, stand apart, analyze, and then function. See, a simple thing like, for example, I don't know, in this class, did we do Tattva Bodha? Did we study Tattva Bodha in this class, Shweta?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I asked this for a particular reason, because in Tattva Bodha, there's a portion where he talks about the subtle body and all that, and the panchakoshas. So there he talks about the manomaya kosha and vijnanamaya kosha, what is it made up of? Manomaya kosha means the mind, mental sheath. Vijnanamaya kosha means intellect sheath. The manomaya kosha is made up of mind and the 5 organs of perception. Vijnanamaya kosha, the intellect sheath, is also made up of intellect and the 5 organs of perception. So 5 organs of perception is common to the thoughts. And the thoughts are indiscriminate in nature, they are called mind. The thoughts are discriminate in nature, they are called intellect. So what it means to say is that through the senses you first get the stimuli through eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. Now I am talking through the ears, the sound is entering you. The sound enters to both the mind and the intellect. Now, before the intellect can process and think and give you direction, the mind jumps to give certain impulsive directions. But if your intellect is strong, you'll be able to control that impulsiveness and then take the guidance from the intellect. But unfortunately, in many of us, when the intellect is weak, you're all going by the mind. We take it for granted. We say, everybody is living like this. So therefore he says, you have to spend time and effort to develop the intellect. It's a skill you got to develop. Like you would learn any other skill. You know, if you want to master violin or golf, even professional golfers, they go and every day spend time in the range. They have to spend time in the range. They have to practice their putting. They have to, you know, use all the clubs and practice. Then when they come and play, you think that they're doing magic. It's all because of their practice. So much time and effort they've spent. And that's what he says here. Continue.
Sorry, I forgot. In the world today, few have developed the art of thinking. People are possessed with groundless beliefs. Propositions are accepted without question as a matter of course. Their beliefs rest upon superstition or someone's mere assertion. They bear no proof. Do you realize that many of our strongest beliefs had taken root in your childhood? Now, as an adult, you find it difficult to question their veracity. They seem to be obviously true. You feel even to question them would be absurd.
See, when you don't develop the art of thinking, what will happen is, you will fall for herd instinct. You will fall for superstitions. Isn't it? This is what is happening. Our beliefs are all groundless. It's not thought about. You see, this, so many people believe that, you know, in fact, last week or 2 weeks before also, I saw somebody while coming out of the parking, first thing in the morning, his car is to be reversed. But first thing in the morning, he didn't want to reverse. Because he believes the whole life, the whole day will be going backwards. So little bit he's going forward. And in front of him, there is another car. He was so close. And I said, "Hey, what are you doing? Why did you go? You should have taken it back." Then he said, no, I have this habit, you know. Always I go little forward and then only I take backwards. So, pagal, just because of his habit, he would have banged on the other car then. This is how superstitious we are. Once a scientist was asked, "Do you believe in superstitions?" He said, "No, I don't believe in superstitions, but I am told it works." You know, all of us have this weakness. Without thinking, we have accepted many things. We have all got this kind of beliefs. We think that the certain color stone that we are wearing in our ring is going to protect us. It's just incredible. And you pay through your nose for those stones. But if you have to buy a book and study, you will think 25 times. Not just because of the money. You have to sit and study, you know, then you have to develop the intellect, then you have to make the right choices. I don't want all this. If I can pay to some Panditji who will do some puja for me, all my karmas will be taken care of. So we have all kinds of beliefs. Swamiji says, in Bombay, in Mumbai, those days, there was a person, people were standing in queue, and to everyone she will charge some 5,000 rupees. And then they give their problems, and she'll say, very simple, "Subhay, you have to get up from your right side, not from your left side. And you should not see anybody first. You should only go and see yourself in the mirror. Then, after brushing, you should have only gai ka doodh, not this doodh or that doodh." Something like that she will say. And they'll follow. 5,000 rupees, 10,000 rupees they'll give. And they'll follow that mechanically. They believe. And some people say, "Because of that, my problem is also solved." Now what will you tell? You know, you can't say anything. So there is this age of superstition, you know. In the Fall of the Human Intellect book, Swamiji has beautifully explained. The first one is age of perception. People just go by perceptions. Then they try to connect, but they connect to unconnected things. That is age of superstition. Then comes age of scientific inquiry. You try to see the cause and effect and connect. Then finally comes the age of contemplation, where even science cannot take. You start dwelling upon Atman, Brahman. That is age of contemplation. So as human beings, we need to move from age of perception to superstition to scientific inquiry to contemplation. But many of us are just stuck at the perception level and superstition level. Very few you will find going into inquiring why it is so. Why not this way? Why that way? You don't question. Because questioning involves effort. Questioning involves disturbance. We do not want to disturb the comfort zone. You know? See, all of us have fallen into some kind of a lethargy after Corona. When I say this, not only this class, I'm saying every class of mine. Now, what has happened is, because of this Corona, nobody expected it will stay for almost 2 years. So most of my classes were online. Now, when things started becoming better, some classes we have started in person. But then, during Corona, so many people from different places are also attending those classes. In this class, it doesn't happen. But there are other classes where some people are attending from Chennai. There's one lady attending my classes from Australia also. So, we still said, okay, even though we have now started the in-person class, let's keep them hybrid. So that these people who have been attending for the last 2 years, let them also benefit, you know. So there are some people coming from Gurgaon, Manesar. Okay, chalo, let them, for them. But then, now what I'm finding is, even people who are living close by, they prefer to come online. So if I have a class of, let's say 25-30 people, 10 fellows are in person, 20 fellows are online. That's how it is. 10 also sometimes don't come, sometimes 6. In person 6, 24 online, 25 online. In other words, nobody wants to disturb the comfort zone. And if you do not want to disturb your comfort zone, you cannot grow. You take it or leave it. You know, they say, no, a sapling will not grow under a big tree. It needs to be taken out from there and planted somewhere else. Because when you become too comfortable, you don't grow. That is the problem. Especially in thinking and all, you know, you become too comfortable following a particular system. You don't want to break that system. Mechanically, you will follow. Nobody questions why. No, no, my grandfather used to do. How can we stop it now? We don't want to stop it. It has to continue. So that's what he's saying. Do you realize that your strongest beliefs have taken root in your childhood? Many of our, you know, that time, okay, we were small kids. So we accepted. But we are not small kids anymore. We are grown-ups. We need to question them. Why is it so? How is it so? Why should I do this? Why should I not do this? So that's why he says, they seem to be obviously true. You're so terrified to question them. You feel even to question them would be absurd. You've accepted it for granted. And how will you grow? Not possible. And then he gives a very interesting example in the next paragraph. Please read that.
Take the example of two men professing different religious beliefs. One, a staunch Hindu. The other, a devout Christian. They were born the same day in a maternity ward 40 years back. The attending nurse committed a colossal blunder. She mistakenly exchanged the newborns in their cradles. The Hindu baby was placed in the Christian mother's cradle and the Christian in the Hindu mother's cradle. And the two children were brought up unknowingly with the opposite domestic, social and religious influences. You could imagine the natural consequence. Both have now grown up holding beliefs totally opposed to their original family and religion. And each now swears by his particular belief.
This is the problem. Any field, if you go a little deep, you will not have this problem. But if you are only at the surface level, you will be in this kind of issue. If you study Vedanta deeply, you will not fight with Christians or Muslims or Zoroastrians or anybody for that matter. But if you don't, then you will fight. And to go and study deeply, who has time and effort? Nobody has the time. Nobody wants to put in that effort. So everybody is having some kinds of beliefs and then they fight with the other. In this example, he is talking about a peculiar situation where children were exchanged in cradle. But so now they are fighting for the opposite faith. not knowing that. Because they're conditioned that way. See, all of us are conditioned in a particular way, you know. Then we behave in that particular way. This is the problem. We don't question. Why does it have to be followed? If it was done the same way every year, why should it be? Why can't it be done in a different way? Nobody questions. And let it be, let it go. It's going on now. Why you want to disturb it? So that's the problem. It says you've got to think. And Vedanta itself, a subject that was born because of thinking. Few people question, ye kya hai? Can life just be kao piyo maja karo? Every day, same thing. I get up, I eat, I enjoy, I sleep. I eat, I enjoy, I sleep. Is this all life all about? Or is there anything more? Every year I'm planning, is bar kahan jayenge? Is bar kahan jayenge? Okay, there's that leave I went there. Now this leave I'll go here. Same routine mechanic. I must have a house in the Alps. I know, I must work hard and I must have a house in the Alps. And then I must have one private jet. Then I must have one. Now, there is nothing wrong in having a private jet or house in Alps or ship. But unquestioned, you develop these kind of desires and thoughts and you just live. Nobody questions, is this all life all about? Iske baad kya? You'll be spending more for the parking than its usage. Or just because you bought it, you have to now go on traveling. So, that's what he's trying to say. In every aspect, you are not applying your thinking. In every aspect. And that's how you've grown up. So now it's difficult now. So he says, Hindu fellow is now fighting for Christian religion. Christian fellow fighting for Hindu religion. If only they sat and studied properly, there is no way they can fight with each other. Who wants to put in the effort? Nobody wants to put in the effort. Even, you know, it's easier for people to take it as a spoon feeding. Nobody wants to sit and read every paragraph, make out its meaning and see how it's applicable in their lives and then put it into practice. Nobody wants to do that. If you do that, your buddhi will be strong. And that will show in your decision making, you know. You'll be able to quickly take decisions. Otherwise, you'll be struggling. Yeah, continue please.
William Ramad remarks, he who cannot reason is a fool. He who will not is a bigot. He who dare not is a slave.
So which category do you belong to? We need to ask ourselves. He who cannot reason is a fool. Who will not is a bigot. And who dare not is a slave. Now, we have to ask ourselves, where do I belong? Do I belong to the foolish category? Or am I a bigot? Or am I a slave? In some places we are slaves. We dare not question. It's been going on. How can I question that? If I question, maybe some pop will come. Therefore, I will not question. See, there must have been certain reasons why they did it in the past. But why should you do it now? Are you with me? Like for example, the practice of sati. In Rajasthan and all, they used to follow that, you know. Practice of sati. Now, they were carrying on mechanically. Maybe once upon a time it was kind of, you know, brought about for some reasons. Whether that reason itself is correct or not, I don't know. But I am told certain things when we have read, you know. You know, when the husbands have died in the war, the wives were all, raped or molested or whatever. So they had to jump into the fire and die by the invading people. So for that reason, Okay, fine. But later on, there was no reason. Just because the fellow died, you will have to jump. What nonsense is this? People don't question. It's been going on, I should follow. That's it. Old is gold. Now, what do you mean old is gold? In what sense? So therefore, many places we are slaves, we don't have any courage to question. We dare not question. That's why we are remaining like slaves. Nobody is enslaving you. You are enslaving yourself because you don't have the courage to question. If you don't question, you remain in comfort zone, you will not grow. Only if you question and take risk, then you grow. Continue, please.
With these facts in mind, look at the present day world. One set of people is hawking spirituality with their own views. Another set is blindly accepting them. Religion has been reduced to mere parroting of ideas picked up from preachers. Neither the preacher nor the pupil can claim to have gone through any systematic study and research, reflection and absorption of the truths of life. People are confused and confounded. In such an irrational state of affairs, how can there be any spiritual edification? The world remains as poor as ever morally and spiritually. People are afflicted with worry and anxiety. They undergo mental strain, suffer from stress. This has been a perennial problem with human beings.
See, in short, what he is trying to say is, you are only interested in listening to the lectures because there is no need to put in effort. And in between, if you want, comfortably you can sleep also. No problem. One of the things why people prefer these online classes is not just that they have to go to another place and attend or something. They can be at home, no need to change clothes also. They can be in normal clothes which they wear at home and then they can attend. Or they can simultaneously be having breakfast and listening to the lectures. Pata nahi kya kya log karta hai. Maybe people are walking in the ground and then listening. I don't know. So, this is the, thing. And we just parrot the ideas after hearing without really questioning them. See, for example, people argue about a particular sloka just reading the commentary and reading the translation. They haven't read the original Sanskrit sloka. And without reading the original Sanskrit sloka, they fight. They fight. For example, in Sanskrit, the word pati means lord also. Pati means husband also. You understand? So, in certain contexts, in certain shlokas, the word pati comes and it is misinterpreted. And they say, see, this is what Hinduism is saying. Where is Hinduism saying this? When somebody translated, they only know the meaning of pati to be husband. So they translated it like that. That is not the case. You understand? So, without studying the original, without thinking, they question. Questioning is fine, but they fight. They go to the extent of killing people. Small kids are dying because of the war, which is due to the attachment to religion. It's incredible. It's pathetic. What kind of a scientific advancement that we have achieved, I don't know. All the energies of so many scientists are being used to kill children. It's pathetic, isn't it? Now it's happening both sides. Both sides. Palestinian side and Israel side. Everywhere it's happening. Ukraine, Russia. Everywhere. Nowadays in the war, they only start bombarding at night mostly. Hospitals are bombarded. This is bombarded. Pata nahi where we are going? Just because of our attachment to land and religion. Nobody thinks. That's what he's trying to say. Even the so-called people who claim to be spiritual in the religious field, they themselves have not put in time and effort to read their scripture. Forget about others. Their own scripture, they have not read properly. They have not put in effort to read. the scriptures correctly. You just get information from different sources and then give. Now, especially you have this artificial intelligence. You know, the other day, one of my colleagues, he just said to ChatGPT, get me a summary of Vedanta. Fantastic summary of Vedanta it brought. Much better than anybody else. Artificial intelligence can do that for you. Get the summary of all the lectures of Lakshmi Narayan. Maybe it will come. You don't have to put in effort. So 1 hour I give here lecture, then you go to ChatGPT and it will give you a little summary. So this is the problem, you know. We are reading summaries. In the schools also, people tell you, and don't worry about reading books. All you need to do is read the guide. You know, in engineering also, when I was studying engineering, they say, this guide is a must. You must buy the guide. There are reference books. Nobody reads the reference books. So thick, first of all, the reference book will be like size of the pillow. Fellows get scared seeing the reference book. My God, I am not going to read this. So they buy the guide and then 5 years question paper. You get those things memorized. You go, you will score good marks. You will pass in distinction. So this, and then we say we are intelligent. Intelligent. What intelligent? This is the problem. That's what he's trying to say here. In such an irrational state of affairs, how can there be any spiritual edification? See, the reason Swami Chinnandaji first designed this weekly classes is 1 week the teacher comes and discusses the subject, then the rest of the day, 6 days, you are supposed to think and question and then come back next week and slowly progress. That was the idea. But I don't know how many of you are studying at home. Maybe this morning you were arguing, I only kept my Vedanta Treatise book here last Thursday. Pata nahi where, who took it where. So to, while dusting, did you keep it there? And then somehow, just before the class, you found the book. If that is the case, then we don't grow. So therefore he says, you got to question why it is said so. If the word pati is there, what is the meaning of the pati in this context? Then you are exercising your buddhi. You know? Then you will understand the verses correctly. Otherwise, this is the problem. There is this book by E. Mander called Clearer Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talks about this. Certain words mean different in different contexts and also in different languages. The sound is same. So, there was a Swami apparently visiting Swami in a city where everybody used to go to take their blessings if there is, his blessings if there is any issues, questions, they will discuss with him, he will give solution, some blessings, whatever they want to take to solve their problems, they go. So many people were going. So one lady was going and she told her visitors at home, she had visitors from abroad, Americans. She said, I am going to meet this Swami. Why don't you also come and take his blessings? So they said, okay, they'll also come. They were young married couples. So they said, okay, we'll also come. And everyone would go to that Swami, prostrate to the Swami and say what their problem is. And then that Swami will give a banana and say, okay, eat this banana, your problem will be solved. Or say this mantra, the problem, something like that will give. So everybody was taking the blessings and going. So when this lady went, she told some problem. Swami blessed her, over. Then she said, these are my guests. They're from America. So they have also come to take your blessings. So Swami asked, okay, what's your problem? They had no problem. So they said, oh, we don't have any issue. We don't have any issue. In India, the word issue also means children. It's a very typical meaning in India. So when they said, we don't have any issue, the Swami thought, oh, they are married and they don't have children yet, child yet. So therefore, okay, I bless you, you will have children soon. And gave them some fruit and sent them away. So the word issue can mean different in different contexts. So like that, you know, you need to develop the clarity. Otherwise you will be in trouble. and many places this is what is happening. That's why he says people are afflicted with worry and anxiety because nobody questions correctly and thinks correctly. People think work is giving them stress. Why? How can work give you stress? If you pause and question, you will understand that. But if you don't pause and question, you will not understand. So you will think work is giving me stress. That's what you will think. So therefore he says, we undergo mental stress and strain, suffer from stress. It has been a perennial problem with human beings. You are in such a hurry to acquire and enjoy, you have very little time to think. Especially nowadays, the lifestyle is such that we just wake up half an hour, 1 hour before going to work. Spend the whole night in doing other things. And wake up just half an hour, 1 hour before, run. So where is the question of, where is the time for even thinking? There is no question. Continue, please.
The world must wake up from its slumber. You must start thinking, questioning, inquiring, reasoning with the truths of life.
For that, you have to first allot time. When he says this, if you understand it is such an important thing in your life, will you not allot some time for it? So, he says the world must wake up from its slumber. You must start thinking, questioning, inquiring, reasoning with truths of life. But that you must spend every day, minimum half an hour to 1 hour. Continue.
The philosophy of Vedanta satisfies the tests of reason and logic. It complies with the principles of sound judgment. The truths that are acceptable to your intellect, you should apply in your life. Verify their authenticity. Then you begin to taste the joys of higher and chaster living. With your personal experience, you would delve deeper into the essence of the Vedanta. Attain peace and happiness.
So when you allot the time every day, question, initially it may be a time taking, but slowly, slowly you will develop the ability to do it much faster. You know? That is why we say when you take decisions also, you will be able to take decisions quickly, fast, not impulsive. You will have that ability because you have been constantly exercising your buddhi. So therefore, he says the philosophy of Vedanta satisfies the test of reason and logic. You won't follow anything blindly thereafter. You know, you stop relying upon the factors outside factors, and start relying upon your thinking. It complies with the principles of sound judgment. So in other words, you take charge of your life. You become the CEO of your life. See, will you call a person simply grown up because his physical body is grown up? Like when your son or daughter, when they were 7 years old, 5 years old, when they caught up, and they didn't fold their blankets, they didn't do any such work, you will be saying, okay, they're only kids. But when the fellow is 25, he still doesn't do. What do you say? Yeah. Fellow is grown up physically, but he's really not grown up. Because he doesn't have that responsibility. Isn't it? He's not matured to that age. Only physically he is looking 25. But emotionally, intellectually, he is not grown. That's exactly the thing he's trying to say here. People should be able to judge, analyze, reflect, and then continue life. If not, you are not a grown up. What is the sign of growth? The sign of growth is to take the responsibility, to own it up. If I'm going on shirking responsibility, and what kind of a grown-up am I? So he says the truths that are acceptable to your intellect, you should apply in your life. You have the courage, you know, let the world say what they want. I'm not going to follow it if it doesn't pass the test of reason or logic. Now this is the thing, you know, children ask these questions. And we are grown up mechanically following. And when children ask these questions, they say, my God, why are you born in my family? Going on asking these kind of questions. But they are right. They want reasons. You are asking me to worship Ganpati ji. Ganpati ji is having elephant head. Why is he having elephant head? You don't know the meaning. What is this? At least today, don't talk about it. Na? Today is Ganesh Chaturthi. Let's talk about it tomorrow. This is how you try to, you know, bypass the whole situation. But children are right. They are asking. Why? What? Why should I light the lamp? What is the significance of this? What is the significance of that? You do not want them to question because you have not questioned. You want them to be trained to follow mechanically. Then you think they are good children. But you got to encourage questioning. That's what he's saying. Test the statement. Verify it in your life. Put it into practice after that. Don't follow mechanics. Even if 25 million people are following, how does it matter? Oh, it is coming from Gita. Now, is it coming from Gita or is it your interpretation of that Gita? If you go, including our class, I'm saying, this, what I'm talking includes our class also. You don't have to follow what Lakshmi Narayan says mechanically. That is how you should think actually. With respect, you listen, then you got to think, come back, question, and develop your buddhi and then grow. That's what he's saying. Then you will begin to taste the joys of higher and chaste living. See, initially, when you're weak, there will be more dependence on the outside world. When you start developing your thinking ability, your dependence reduces. See, when we are small children, you need to hold the hands of your parents to cross the road. As you grow older and older, you don't need anybody to, you know, hold their hands and then cross the road. You can cross the road without anybody's support. And when you grow further, what happens? You help people cross the road. Isn't it? Blind people, old people, children, you help them cross the road. So this is growth, no? First, you are dependent. You hold your parents or brothers or sisters' hands and then cross the road. Then once you have grown up, you don't need anybody's support. Without anybody's support, you can cross the road. Then you will offer your hand to support other people, to help them to cross the road. That means you have grown even more. This is the idea, and that is only possible if you develop your ability to think. For that you need to first, you know, like you allot 7 to 8, I walk every day. 6:30 to 7, I do yoga every day. The yoga teacher comes home, I do yoga 6:30 to 7. And then 7 to 8, I go for a walk or a jog. So 6:30 to 8, you have allotted the time for your body. What about your mind, intellect? What about your atma? Where is the time for it? You think little bit time you spend in the puja room, that's enough. Singing some bhajans or doing some puja, showing aarti, that's enough. No. That's what he says. If you want to grow more, to become absolutely independent, you need to start reading, reflecting and practicing what, you know, came out successfully when you applied in the test of logic. Then you follow it. Then you will say, like he says, you know, you will begin to taste the joys of higher and chaste living. With your personal experience, you will delve deeper into the essence of Vedanta. This is how a student of Vedanta should proceed. Then only you will be able to attain peace and prosperity, happiness. Let's conclude. Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmanava Prakrite Swabhava Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmahi Narayana Yeti Samarpayami.